Blog Talk Radio.
Like tempered steel glowing red in a bed of coals, the poet is born. Our story is riddled with challenges and changes, like blows from a blacksmith's hammer, bent and chiseled into shape. If only forging a poet were that easy. Emotional development, relationships, experiences, environment, and genetics all take a hand in molding the adult we are today. So, welcome to Double Helix, where we examine the X's and the Y's on a show celebrating the human experience, where your true colors are what ties the room together. Get comfortable, because what you're about to hear is the poetry we are made of. This is Double Helix, part of Late Night Poets. We are a group on allpoetry.com. You don't have to be in the group to participate, but it's more fun if you are. You can chat with us in the chat. You can read the poems as we do. And you can enter our contest to be on the show. I'm Athasiana, and with me I have Daniel Deschino. Hi, Dan.
Hey, you do. I am here. You have me. The question is, what are you going to do now? You got me here. That's the million-dollar question.
I'm going to make you read some poetry. That's what I'm going to do.
All right, I love it. So that song, that's a carryover from the last contest. That was a song called A Second Chance by Katarina Supanetsky. We were very honored to have her join the show last time. Unfortunately, she was going to join the show today. She really wanted to, but she's very busy. She was unable to join the show tonight. But we appreciate her partnership on this as well, too. I know she read all the poems and she participated in the contest, the judging as well too. So we miss you, Katarina, but we were so happy to have you join the last show. Like I said, she's a very busy person. I know she just came off of a concert with Shakira Jones, who's a jazz vocalist. She just did in Philadelphia. She's playing with she's playing right now percussions with Pablo Batista, who's a very famous renowned percussionist doing albums with him. She's very, very busy. Everybody go check out her website at katsupanetsky.com, and you can find her on YouTube and iTunes, Instagram, all over the place. Definitely check her music out. But yeah, so we have some carryover poems that was based on that song that we just heard, A Second Chance. And then I think we have another contest that you started as well too.
That's right.
We're going to do tonight. Excellent. Let's get cranking. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Yeah. No, that's okay. That song we just listened to was our prompt 4. We already did the first 3 prompts last time. So these are our entries to prompt 4, starting with Silent Tree. And I'm going to click that. A Second Chance by Silent Tree. As dawn draws near and his tractor taillights fade, when a lone cock crowed and the window canvas frayed, my memories lay trapped inside a lamina of cellophane squares. Teardrops washed away the pale cobblestones of yesteryears. Entwined in the vines of his embrace, lest my body breaks, doe-skin fingers dance curves as my ivory skin sheath quakes. A whispered lexicon bathed from his matchbook tongue as a waterfall of language drowned inside an iron lung. Sometimes all we really need is a second chance, another time to sow a seed and watch the seasons dance, never to waste a day worried of what was past my glance. We ride crescendo waves of timber notes to nature's romance. The sailboat of dreams casts adrift upon a plateau of oceans, plowing through a swell of rusted crescent waves in motion, a glazed earthenware tapestry woven from a wilted grapevine, footprints in the sand stripped away an hourglass of shorelines. My rainbow quill of shadows, the dry inkwell rivers run, pastel watercolors brushed to an aurora of a setting sun. As leaves fall and tumble down the empty neon boulevard, paper feathers flew away like a motif deck of postage cards. Sometimes all we really need is a second chance, another time to sow a seed and let the seasons teach, never to waste a day worried of what was past my reach. We ride crescendo waves of timber tones to nature's romance. End poem.
Excellent read, Faizy. And one of the things I loved about this contest was it was so diverse. It was very, very hard to judge. I know that, like I said, Katarina did help with the judging, and there was some, some of the poems really touched her because they were very musical, you know, and they kind of felt like what she was going with in music. And I really like how this is musical. I mean, I see it. It's rhyming, and it has almost like a chorus, right? Sometimes we all really need a second chance, another time to sow a seed, watch the seasons dance. Never waste a day worried what was past my glance. We ride crescendo waves of timbre notes to nature's romance. That's a beautiful a chorus. And so, again, there's so much diversity, and I really think that's indicative of music, where, everybody is, takes music differently and hears different things in it. I might have told this story last time, but I'm way below repeating myself. When I was in a band, we had this singer, and I brought to her something from Led Zeppelin's Physical Graffiti album. And I said, "Hey, can we sing this?" And I had to try to convince her. I remember her saying, I don't know if she didn't like the song or something. She said, "Well, tell me what it means. Why does it mean to you? What is it? Why does the song mean so much?" And I didn't have an explanation. It was just a time in my life when I was discovering music, and it was just a magical time of college, and it just has that feeling for me, and I just love the music, and that, you know, it's different for everybody. And this is really interesting because I think it was so beautifully written, as the way I'm taking it is her second chance, where she's you know, it's beautifully written, but there's some sadness there too. And, you know, she's talking about the sailboat of dreams cast adrift upon a plateau of oceans, plowing through a swell of rusted crescent waves in motion. So almost like she's going on this kind of journey of going through the second chances of life and being able to actually live it. I thought the imagery in this was really beautiful, and you could tell she really put a lot of work into this poem, definitely one to be proud of. So I enjoyed it a lot. I like Silent Tree's, you know, poetry in general anyway, but great job, Silent Tree. I thought it was awesome. How about you, Faziana? You did a great job reading it. What do you think about our first poem tonight?
I thought it was very sensual. You know, doe skin is so soft. Doe skin fingers dance curves as my ivory skin she quakes. The matchbook tongue, it's like that tongue that sets you on fire with a waterfall drowning your iron lung. Like this whole thing is like super sexy. Clearly there's a lot of metaphors in here, but there's something very sensual near the beginning. And then when it gets into the rainbow quill, I was really interested how it's my rainbow quill of shadows. Usually you think of shadow as being kind of like devoid of color or just being a darkness, but it's a rainbow quill of shadows, and it has pastel watercolors that are brushed. So, your shadow is something that follows you. And instead of leaving darkness wherever she went, she left watercolor. She left a beautiful mark trailing behind her, that glow of something positive about her. And I thought that was a really interesting, beautiful concept.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. I got the sensuality too, but for some reason after I just got lost in the other imagery that I saw. And she continues with that as the leaves fall and tumble down on the empty neon boulevard. I thought was interesting. Paper feathers flew away like a motif that was described. But I like the empty neon boulevard. She has all these kind of, you know, interesting color themes on here, which I think goes with music, right? You talk about music, about colors and music, and maybe that's where she got that from. So pretty cool. All right. I'm guessing we're going to do another one. You're going to post, and it's going to be my turn. My magic ball
that's
is saying
true.
That's what's going to happen. Excellent.
It's right, pretty much the standard of how it works. So you are going to be reading the one by Red Summertime.
Excellent. All right, Red Summertime is called Set Fire to the Rain. The rain falls down in steady stream, softly tapping the window pane. But underneath the surface sheen, the embers of a flame remain. Who can say what lies beneath the tranquil scene of falling rain? Perhaps a heart in pain or grief, but loves that's been burned up in flames. Love's trials leave us feeling rough. The past remains forever fixed. Forgiveness can just be enough, a fact of life that can't be mixed. Second chances can be rare when two hearts can reunite. They are a gift that should be shared so love can burn so bright with light. And when the night is dark and still and memories are free to range, perhaps it's best to burn the thrill and undergo a total change. So let the flames consume the past and cleanse the heart of all its pain. For nothing good can ever last unless you set fire to the rain. End poem.
Excellent read. I have to admit, the title makes me think of the Adele song. So as soon as I read that, I had it in Adele's voice as we were going. So I was a little bit distracted by that. But I thought this was wonderful. I love the sound of rain. So starting off with that rain coming down, tapping on the window just really creates that mood. It sets the tone for things. Where is it now? The past remains forever fixed. Forgiveness can just be enough, a fact of life that can't be nixed. So the past can't be changed. It can't, you know, we can't undo things that we regret. It's forever fixed. It's stuck in place. But we can respond differently and make changes based on it. Second chances can be rare, for when two hearts can reunite, they are a gift that should be shared, so love can burn so bright with light. And there's a few places where it talks about burning, where the either it's becoming light or it's cleansing because it's burning away things. So this set fire to the rain kind of works in two directions. On the one hand, it creates a brightness that gives us hope for the future, but it also, you know, burns away things, and that can give you hope to let go of the past. Fire can be painful too. So it's painful as you restart, get rid of that underbrush in order to save the forest. You do a controlled burn and don't get an out of control fire that could have gone nuts if we didn't like clear out what we had to. So it feels like almost like a forest fire kind of metaphor, but it works really well at the message here. So I thought that was well done. What did you think, Dan?
I agree. I'm just kidding. I'll comment too. I was trying to make a joke. Yeah, my jokes get worse as the night goes on, as I get very sleepy. No, I love this. You know, I don't know how we ever judge this contest, because these poems were so good. I really don't. I love the rhyme on this. I want to start with just the compositional part of it. You know, I've heard people before say, I just not really on this website, but I've heard people say before that, you know, rhyming poetry can't be as good as free verse because it's because you're limited and you have to kind of rhyme, and I could not disagree more. In fact, even though I mostly write free verse, I my favorite poem is lyrical rhyming. And we did get a lot of them with this musical contest we had of lyrical poems, and this is just so beautiful to read. It flowed amazingly, which I always think is a hard thing to do, to make rhyming poem flow just beautifully. And it's not even just the syllables that you're matching. It's just the flow of it, and I think this is just flawless. And I love the feel of it. You mentioned it as well too, with Faziana, but the idea and the feel. So the first stanza, the rain falls down in steady streams, softly tapping, and then he ends with, but underneath the surface sheen, the embers of flame remain. And so at the end now, so let the fires consume the past and cleanse the heart of all its pain, for nothing good can ever last unless you set fire to the rain. So, you know, there's the rain as that, I mean, the fire, excuse me, as the, you know, the passion that always burns, but there's always rain. But even though there is embers, right? So you have to, you know, the only way to do it is to actually, you know, set fire to the rain to, you know, if you're destroying everything. But I just love that kind of metaphor that I think is in here of, you know, embers kind of always burning even when it's raining out, or it's dark and damp out. So this is just absolutely beautiful from Red Summer Time. It was so much fun to read too. As well, last comment I'm going to say, just to give him a compliment again, is I'm staring at it right now, and to be honest, I just want to read it again. Like that's how much fun it was to read and go through. It just felt good. I do that sometimes with lyrics that I think are just well written. They're fun to read. Like it's an enjoyment to sit there and just read them, especially out loud. And that's how I felt about this one. So it was great. And your turn to read now, I believe. What are we going to do?
Actually, we have a SoundCloud, so Hall of Poetry is going to read it themselves.
All righty.
Okay. Is it Hall of... I set the name wrong. It is... Oh, no, Hall of Poetry. Just there.
Hall of Mindfulness is their name, I think. Oh, Hall of Poetry, yeah. Okay, wait a minute.
It used to be Hall of Mindfulness. In the studio, it says Hall of Mindfulness, but then I think they changed
the Hall
name.
Of Poetry. Oh, interesting.
Unless,
okay.
The artist
formerly known as Hall of Mindfulness. That's what we're
confusing us with the name change there. All right, here we go.
Cut us loose. Remember to come home. No more ignoring all the signs. The longing brought depression, necessary to release these binds. Shackles of opinions, expectations wrapped too tight. Once discarded, brought the freedom necessary for clear sight. Ignorance is bliss, so far from the truth. Where suffering breeds, separation feeds. Knowing will cut us loose. Cut us loose. Cut us loose. 2020 vision, not just seen, but felt within. Struck the heart, brought recognition. Necessary to quit the din. No more thoughts of the asylum, witnessed but not misled. The silence brought us falling, necessary to die before we're dead. Ignorance is bliss, so far from the truth. Where suffering breeds, separation feeds. Knowing will cut us loose. Cut us loose. Cut us loose. End of poem. Sample.
Wow, I really enjoyed that. Oh, wasn't quite done there, sorry. Thank you, Hall of Poetry, for making an audio. It was beautiful to hear in your own voice. Whenever anyone enters our contest, we encourage you to give us a SoundCloud, an MP3, YouTube video, pardon me, to show us how you would read it. So even if you can't call in, we get to hear it in your own voice, which we love. I thought this was a really great piece. I liked the second stanza the best. Shackles of opinions, expectations wrapped too tight, once discarded brought the freedom necessary for clear sight. I love that. It kind of makes me think of, like, the age of reason. So when you get old enough that you can kind of think for yourself, I know teenagers get a bad rap of people think that they don't think much. Teenagers tend to be looked down on, but actually there's this kind of open-mindedness that that a lot of teens get at a certain age where they become like their own person, and in figuring out who they are, they kind of let go of a lot of the things that were drilled into them, and that can, you know, create some rebellion that not everybody loves. But I seem to remember, you know, realizing that, you know, I wasn't trapped within the opinions of necessarily who I was. I went to Catholic school and it was super strict, and I kind of fell away from religion. And I'm not saying that's the thing to do for everyone, but shackles of opinion no longer held me down, and expectations wrapped too tight. There's certain points in your life where you feel like you can't possibly be who everyone wants you to be. You just don't fit that way. And I feel this here in that second stanza. And it talks about ignorance being bliss is not true, because once you find out things, once you see that there are other ways of living, that there are other opinions, that there is more out there than your little world that you had experienced so far. There's a lot to express and to have freedom. So that cut us loose, that take away the blinders and let us find out information from all different places is really interesting. Where is it? There was a part I wanted to point out near the end. Necessary to die before we're dead. So you don't get to just skip a stage. And that's true in life as well. You can't just kind of jump to when you have things together. It makes me think of that song, like, wake me up when it's all over, when I'm wiser and I'm older. I think that's Imagine Dragons, but I'm not totally sure. So it's that idea of, you know, wanting to skip ahead until you're ready to handle life. And this is not how it works. You got to make your way there. And you can't just jump into the afterlife. You have to die first. Things are a painful process. Growing up hurts. And any stage in life as we transition into a new stage hurts. You know, puberty kind of sucks. And then middle age is not great. And then when you are elderly, there's problems. Every stage of life has its own issues. And you don't get to just skip to the next one. There is always that transition time as you figure things out.
Well, the first thing I want to say is I don't think the Catholic Church has Catholic school working the way that they think it works. Because I can't tell you how many people I talk to who, like, well, I went to Catholic school, but now so I'm completely, you know, away from it. But there was a time, so my son went to a Catholic high school, and I let him kind of pick, you know, his religion stuff. I know this has nothing to do with the poem. I'll be quick, I promise. So one day he came up to me when he was young, and he said, Dad, you know, we should go to church. It's like the least we could do. I said, okay. So I started taking him to church, and then he went to his Catholic high school and never went back again. So I don't know. I don't think they really recruit people very well. Anyway, the poem was, I'm sorry, were you going to say something, Stacey? That's okay, I didn't know if you were going to say something. The poem was great, and I too was kind of really like the ignorance is bliss, because because ignorance can be bliss. The story that I always get, and this only happened to me a few years ago, is I was in the, and I don't know why it struck me. You know how just dumb, stupid things kind of stick with you? So I was in the, excuse me for the noise. I was in a supermarket, and I was sitting there and shopping, and I just noticed this couple who was walking around, and they were like, they were older. They were in their 40s or something, and they were like little kids, and they were just buying, their cart was filled with like Captain Crunch and Ho-Ho's and Ring-Dings and like ice cream, and I didn't know if I saw a food and like bacon and like just the worst foods you could possibly eat. And I remember, and I noticed them because they bought like a pre-made like cake, like an Entenmann's or something cake, and then they walked up to the bakery and asked them to put extra frosting on it and put it in, and they were so excited about it. And I'm just thinking, like, and all I could think of was like, and I'm literally, as they were doing that, I'm literally reading the carton on something I'm buying to say, oh, I don't know about this chemical. I don't know what's going in here. And all I could think of was they're going to live to be 100 and I'm going to die like tomorrow because I'm worried about everything. So ignorance is bliss. But, you know, the truth is sometimes it is bliss, because if you don't know, you know, if you just, if there's horrors somewhere and you don't know about them and you forget about them, then you're happier sometimes if you don't know what's happening. But at the same time, it can be very far from the truth, because there can be a much happier life for you, right? There can be a much more freeing. I mean, you talk to any Buddhist, ignorance is farthest from the bliss. It's from bliss. It's the truth. It's the search for the truth that you're going for. So I most people go for the ignorance is bliss as the statement, whereas, which I believe is a religious thing. I think that actually, I can't remember where that comes from. Maybe it's not religious, but I love how she goes the other way as well too, which it is far from the truth. Suffering breeds, separation feeds, knowing will cut us loose. So, it's the knowledge, and it makes me think of like almost like a abusive relationship, I don't know why, where, you know, the ignorance of, you know, well, this is my life, and making yourself happy, whereas if you know what, I can, there's other things I can do with life that's even better than what I think all life can be. So I, too, was fascinated by that stanza as well. But it was really well done. It was beautiful. And, yeah, I love the Hall of Poetry. I really love the SoundCloud. Keep sending them more SoundClouds. So excellent, excellent. And what have we got going on in the world now?
Now we have a poem by Hats, and that is Fishing Solitude. So I will read that. Fishing Solitude by Hats. A fisherman in the green coat sits on a camp chair. He hears the fall of an owl's feather from the flapping of wings in the setting sun. His silver fishing rod reflects the setting sun rays. A slip bobber waits on the surface. Silence is blue, the same as his mood. Grass rustles in the breeze. Gray moon sits quietly on the black mountains. A willow leans and looks at the river in silence. The croaking of frogs rings in his ears. End poem.
Excellent read. Excellent read. And I always like Hatch, one of my favorite poets on this website. And again, what I said earlier before, you know, you can get so much out of music. And some people were taking the title and feeling that with listening to it. But other ones, I believe, she listened to the song and this is what she pictured in her mind. I do that a lot when I'm listening to music. I can see things. If anybody knows who Mannheim Steamroller is, they're very famous for, like, their Christmas albums, but you got to listen to the early stuff. That kind of reminds me of Katarina and also reminds me of George Winston. So these are all people I think have very, very visual music. I can just picture things. And I'm guessing this is what Hats is doing when she was listening to it. She pictured this beautiful little scene. And I just love the way she described it. he hears the fall of an owl's feather. It is very, very interesting, because it's to me, that's just the person is so in tune with being there. And if you've ever gone fishing, you know, for a fisherman, fishing is catching fish. But for an amateur person like me, it's not as much about the catching the fish as it is about just hanging out, doing nothing. It really is. Like just casting it out, and hopefully you catch a fish every once in a while, but just standing in a beautiful lake or river and kind of casting the rod out and just kind of hanging out and listening, and that's to me what fishing is more about, again, because I'm just an amateur. And so hearing that, you know, an owl's feather actually fall was interesting. And the fishing rod is reflecting the setting sun rays, and the barber just waits on the surface. Silence is blue, same as his mood. And the grass rustles. He's so kind of quiet and peaceful. Everything is just around him. And the willow probably that he's sitting by is with him too. That's interesting that's what she personified in this out of all the other things, was the willow leaning and looks at the river in silence, the croaking of frogs ringing in his ear. So interesting. And what did you think? I just basically took up the, I commented on the entire poem, so didn't mean to take up the whole thing. Faziana, what are your thoughts?
I found it interesting in the first sentence that it's the green coat, because a fisherman hears an owl's feather, so it's like kind of like just one that's out there. But in the green coat just makes it feel like it's like something special about that coat. I got stuck on the, which is a weird word to get stuck on, but it just seemed like it changed the context a little bit. It's not the fisherman in the green coat, it's a fisherman in the green coat. I'm probably just lost in semantics, but I felt like that might have had a significance there. And then I love owls, and I really like feathers, so I just, the fall of an owl's feather, I'm picturing it kind of blowing in the wind as it comes down, and to hear that shows how silent it is, because a feather falling is a tiny, tiny noise. So the flapping of wings is one thing, that you might be able to hear, but the falling of the feather, that shows that every little thing, you know, it's a pin drop, less than a pin drop, and you can hear it and make out those sounds. That's someone who's really listening carefully, is observant. The silence being blue is interesting to me. Blue is something I would associate with fishing, because often the water is blue, the sky is blue on the days where you go fishing, and that blue is, for the most part, a positive thing. You want to be out in the water. You want to have clear skies. And yet, when we're saying blue here, the same as his mood, we're seeing sadness, I think. So it's always an interesting contradiction to me, is we're hoping for blue skies, but blue represents our sadness. And grass rustling in the breeze naturally makes my brain go to green. So we're talking about the colors here. There's the silverfish, the green coat, and the green grass rustling in the breeze. It's a very visual poem for me. And then the willow being the one that leans, like you said, Dan, the willow is what is personified here more than in the owl, more than the fish. It's the willow who seems to be alive. And for me, that's related to the fact that there are weeping willows. And we're talking about the silence being blue and his mood being blue. Maybe he relates to the weeping willow as it leans over and kind of seems to have that sadness that he's feeling. I really liked it.
Interesting. Yeah, no, this is a great, I love when, you know, like I said earlier, when it, like you said, it's visual. And the music gets that, gives you that kind of picture in your head. Excellent. Cool. All right. And it's my turn, I'm guessing.
It is. And this is by another Daniel who also has the initials DD. So it just feels fitting that you're the one to read it.
Okay. Did you want me to read this one? Or I think I have, I don't know if we're going to do mine at all after this. I don't know if you want me to read two in a row or you read two. I don't know if we're going to have time to do mine or not.
Oh, we will do yours. But you can do two in a row, because otherwise I'm doing two in a row.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah, but, you know, you're you. So, all right, I will read the other DD. I'm the lesser DD. Daniel is the first DD. And this one, fitting to end, is called A Maiden Who Plays Piano. A beautiful young maiden started to play a song, one that invoked a whimsical journey into paradise, where the sky is always in twilight's glow, and stars dance to amuse the cherubs. Haunted melody played to honor the sun, which only one minstrel can surmise, because she is endowed with the gift to compromise. Pen and ink coverage in a kaleidoscope of treble clefs. If played outside, the birds would stop to listen to the maestro play. upon her golden piano that comes to life with every stroke of the keys, stopping the world from moving with its melody. Gentle hearts mourn for its beautiful tones, crying tears of happiness, never wanting the music to end, because of being under the clutches of an enchanted spell cast by the maiden blessed with beauty's forte. End poem.
Great read. I think this makes sense with listening to the music, you know, imagining the piano player who's making such beautiful music. I like that it's a whimsical journey into paradise, because often when you hear instrumental, you kind of let your mind go in interesting places. And as someone who likes to read fantasy and watch things like Lord of the Rings and, you know, go on medieval adventures myself, that's often where my mind goes if I'm listening to instrumentals. So it seems that Daniel Duhaime is of similar mindset, where his mind just goes on a journey listening to that. The stars dance to amuse the cherubs. The little baby angels are just loving the stars. I thought that was cute. Because she is endowed with the gift to compose. The diction here is very old-fashioned, and it gives kind of a classical feel. Pen and ink converge in a kaleidoscope of treble clef. So that's the writing and the music intertwined there. Where is the other part? Being under the clutches of an enchanted spell cast by the maiden, blessed with beauty's forte. That's wanting to stay under that spell, even though being in the clutches sounds kind of like a negative thing. To be clutched by a beautiful spell such as this is something that you want to keep. What did you think, Dan?
I do agree with that. And I really like that I don't think we had a poem yet on here that was talking about the piano player, you know, which I think is really interesting, and the magic of that. And I really think there is a magic in the musician. I don't know if it's because I'm a musician myself, but I just love live music. I have pretty much since I first discovered music. I'll go see anybody live. I don't know if anybody here knows who Morgan James is, but I was just, while I was waiting for the show, I watched a whole bunch of Morgan James videos, and I just, you know, I could just watch musicians just play all day long, and I kind of do sometimes. I'll go see anybody in concert, and it's just that passion and that concentration and that dedication I just absolutely love. So the fact that he concentrated on the piano player instead of anything else, I thought was great. I mean, all the, you know, I like a couple of the musical things on here too. So the pen and ink converge in a kaleidoscope of treble clefs. That's a really great way to describe that, you know, thinking that she physically wrote it down, right, on a piece of a sheet music, and then it becomes a kaleidoscope of the treble clefs, and then cast by a maiden blessed with beauty's forte. So another musical term, forte, on there as well, too, I thought was fun. And there's so much beautiful descriptive, like, you know, adjectives on here, the golden piano, the haunted melody, the whimsical journey. You know, he's just describing kind of how this music is taking people away. And anybody that does play music, that's what it feels like a lot. Like you're just kind of lost in it. It's almost a meditation when you're playing, and I've been playing drums for a long time now, and I just don't have time to learn. I wish I could sit down and practice things. I don't, but I've been playing enough where I can sit down and just play. And it's always a journey for me. Like when I'm playing, I honestly have no idea what's going to happen. I'm not unless I'm like just playing along with a song, I just sit down and just start banging things, and I'll be playing and all of a sudden I go, hey, that's kind of a nice rhythm. You can't see me. I wish I was on camera. You could see me move my hands. I'll just go, that's kind of a cool rhythm. I don't know where that came from, but I'm playing it now, and it's kind of cool. I'll go with that. It just kind of happens. You know, you go on this journey, and I think that's what he's kind of describing here. And it's I don't know if Daniel is a musician or not, but I think he really captured that feel of just being a musician, kind of, you know, playing around and just going on a little bit of a journey. So really cool. Great job, DD, fellow DD. All right, so we're almost done. Do we have time to do mine, or should we move on?
We have time.
Okay. Yeah, so we can do that. So I wrote one as well, too. It was not in the contest, but, you know, I'm a big fan of Katarina's, and I wrote a poem based on it. So to give a quick introduction to it. So I'm writing a little bit of a novella about I don't know why I picked the past, but I kind of know why I picked the past, but it's about this young boy who gets orphaned from Mount Vesuvius, basically, and then just goes on this journey around the globe, kind of discovering himself in the world and philosophy and enlightenment and spirituality. And right now I'm up to, I think, part 24. This one is part 12, and it was inspired by not the last prompt, but by her one of the other prompts, which is a song called Distant Air that Katarina Supernetsky wrote. Excuse me. And one of the things that I have this character doing is kind of discovering his senses. It's based on when I was younger, when I was a teenager, I did a lot of karate. I studied ninjutsu, actually. And the ninjas spend a lot of time honing their senses in. So really, really making sure their senses are super strong so that they can hear things and see things, and they're very aware of the world that's around them. So it's based on I try to cover the 32, yes, the 32 senses, the 32 scientific senses. I think in 7 or 8 poems I do, and I dedicate one to hearing, which is inspired by Katarina's song, which is this one here. So that's what the song's about, and it's called Songs in the Distant Air, Part 12 of the Journey. When I have learned to see beyond the lights, to realize the invisible in the visible, and realize the air as a parental guardian, taken advantage of and assumed would always be there, I always breathe because there is always air. There was not, it would be nothing. The light itself seems to float among the atmosphere, singing with color and dancing with darkness. The sound is there singing invisibility, painting a picture. The music never really stops. It's just always misunderstood what music, I've just always misunderstood what music is. Even in the purity of quiet, just a rest between notes. First notes I hear, the opening overture, the other creatures around me. There is no random chatter, only purposeful, emotional song. Call and answer, warning signs, mating cries, interactive vocalist counterpoint. A large bird lands in the river. For the first time ever, I really hear it. The splash, the waves, the ripples. Everything has a song. I hear it now. What a fool to think music was a man-made invention, man-made instruments, played by man. When it is everything. Where there is peace, there is orchestrated harmony. Where there is chaos, dissonance destroys. The air itself, the conductor, the maestro, and the only instrument. And we, all, everything, musicians, born to play the winds, but never taught to hear it. Trees elevated to the realm of sunshine speak in a tender whisper. They talk of the wind, direction, and flow. There is a happiness in the voice I never heard before. When the rains come, it is as if a concert, all animals quiet and listen, every drop on every surface, as a note to play, to harmonize. And me? Never really heard me before. I know I breathe, but each breath I hear it now, a story from my lungs. Each footstep, a leaf crunch, is a time machine. Each time I speak, do I hear what I say? The air is life. I've seen those without it for seconds, and they are not. The air is protection. I understand the fires of heaven, and the mortal shield is air. The air, music, invisible scribe for every voice, every story, and a harmonizer for all things to become music. I understand, and now I listen. End poem.
Oh, Dan, that was fantastic. I really like this focus on the wind and air. To realize the invisible in the visible, there's things beyond what we notice. To know that there is more to life than what we see. That there's more to listen to than we hear initially. And sound is there singing invisibility. There's a whole other sense that fills things in that makes you realize, music also kind of has a spatial awareness thing. Different setups make it different. If you have an empty house, if you're just moving in or moving out, it travels so differently and can create an awareness of your space. I really like
that's true. You just said the it's very interesting because music is all air, and if you're in a concert hall, yes, you're getting it from the speakers and all that, but you're actually kind of almost listening to the concert hall talk to you because the music is echoing off of it. So that's all it is vibrating air, right? So everything, like you said, everything around you is part of that. That music. So, yeah, interesting. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, that's good. I can't find it now. There was a spot that was about how silence is misunderstood because it's just a beat between the music. I lost it. But
don't ask me questions about my own poetry. I don't know where it is.
There was something about
does the music never really stops? It's always misunderstood what music is, even the purity of quiet, just a rest between notes. Is that what you meant?
Yes, that's the part I'm thinking of. So I really enjoyed that part. And I think it's true of life that sometimes the quiet moments that we think are lacking are actually a part of everything. You need to have that pause to really appreciate the things on either side of it. That if you just mesh everything together and it's all one big memory, one story that's been squished, you can't really process it. Having those lulls between things, having those moments to think are so important. And having those quiet moments in a song lets you hear the individual sounds rather than it all blending together. The silence is a key part of the music. It's sort of like having the space between words. If we just had a jumble where there was no space at all, it would be so hard to process. So we need to appreciate those breaths in between the beats. Where is it now?
I had a college professor, I'll give him a shout out, nobody knows his name, Paul Straffenberger, and he gave a very interesting definition of music, which I never heard anywhere else. And he said the definition of music is a combination of sound and silence. He made it that simple. And you're thinking wait, isn't it notes and instruments? No, he just said it's sound and silence, which makes everything, every single sound music, every single thing you hear music, and he just kind of opens it up. And I always like that definition of music. And, that's what I was thinking when I did that. I think, it's who's going to define, why is somebody saying this is what music has to be? It's kind of like poetry, right? The beginning of that movie, Dead Poets Society. How to enjoy poetry, and he rips it out. What? Who's going to tell you that? Poetry is what you want to write, so why is that the same with music?
I like that. Because I relate everything in life to picture books, it also made me think about the book Giraffes Can't Dance. So everyone else in the jungle, they were trying to dance to different kinds of music. There was, like, some people who samba, some people who did the, like, of all different kinds of music, and all the animals had a song that they liked. And then the giraffe couldn't do any of the things. He's too clumsy for any of the dances that other people were doing. And I think it was a cricket or some kind of little animal or insect tells the giraffe, you just need to find your own kind of music. So just listen. Go to your favorite spot and listen. And the giraffe listens to, like, the sound of the wind in the trees and things like that, and just kind of, like, sways to nature. And everyone loves the way the giraffe is dancing, and it just becomes a thing of, like, follow your own beat kind of thing. So it's a positive message, but just the giraffe kind of moving to the sounds of nature and enjoying it underneath the moon came to mind as we were reading this.
And that's the same thing. It's you know, how do you define, Frank Zappa has this very obscure song. It's just some dumb little improv that he did when he was live way back in the 60s, and he calls the name of it is "You Call That Music?" with a question mark, and it's just almost atonal and arrhythmic banging on percussion instruments. And, you know, why is that not music? You know, it's really up to the, like you said with that kid's book, it's up to the perception of the person. So I like that. Very cool.
Yeah.
All right, cool. So I think now we have the second contest that you started.
We do. So it's kind of breaking down the different trauma responses, which are fight, flight, freeze, and fawn. Fight or flight is very popular, that people talk about how they react to things, that natural reaction to, like, either go for conflict or go towards the problem or run away from the problem. But it's also very common to have freeze or fawn responses, where you just can't do anything. Your body feels frozen, your mind feels frozen, and it's just like, I don't know what to do, and you're just stuck there. And then fawn tends to be that kind of, like, play dead kind of thing, which for a long time was me. I used to faint whenever anything stressful was happening, and it was just like, my mind went, nope, and it just abandoned my body, just noped right out. So people will respond differently. So my prompt was, think about a scenario you have been in or a scenario you might realistically face, and write a 4-part poem with either a stanza or section dedicated to each of these types of responses in the face of the same scenario. So a few people commented that this was a very challenging contest, and they were like, I'm not writing to that. It's too hard. But there were a few people who took on the challenge, and I'm going to read one by Ben Hart, who often breaks things into multiple parts. So it'll be interesting to see how he did it this time.
Oh, wait, I actually have a comment for you from Ben. Where is it? Shoot, I lost it. Oh, here it is. Well, Ben actually said, tomorrow morning, because I asked him, I said, hey, you're going to listen to it? He said, tomorrow morning I will listen to it with my cigarette and smile so bright when Afasiana laughs.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, so I thought I'd relay that message.
Thank you. Okay. Speechless, Unmuted by Ben Hart. 1. The birth. Fawn. You're invited into love, the way day breaks over Berlin to forgive. How fool stumbles before running into the moment life begins. Like wind plays the reeds to reveal streetlights shining still. The parting of static you were part of upon moving away. You are invited to be part of something that exists outside the mind in sentient sensation, beyond thought or blood, heart or soul, a war we cannot see, where the point isn't victory or defeat, but death of the old. The time comes for us all to name this world by our decree and not keep fighting endlessly for a world that until then had never heard of me. You're invited to become God. Guide the tides. Hold the flood. Be everything you were, so sure you were not. But you must fight, young one. Always you must fight for love. 2. The Marble Garden. Freeze. It was good to talk to you of life and woe, the rising snow, where I had froze and thought it so, that life was to them what death was to me. Over too soon. And you looked and found the rocks all around the courtyard clean and knew they were not there to eat. No, they were there for me, keeping watch over the eagle that you had come to heal, like so many before, who had frozen to the floor, an audience around the mute. Still, it was good to talk to you and remind me that not death nor life on their own could ever be divine. 3. The Leaving Flight. Wait for me after. Don't wait too long. I haven't the heart left for another song, and I hear their laughter saying just stay gone, because you should heal wherever the well. Don't wait for me. If you feel you need to leave hell, I'll find my own way out. Just hold my hand when it sticks above the ground. 4. The Muse. She thinks my muse exists only in my mind. It makes me laugh that I'm either such a good liar or they are too blinded by the beauty bound in hazel eyes. She is euphoria's unraveling into string every time I get close. And though I am running again, it feels the same as when I froze, the way she leaves the door open as she exits into the snow. And all I see is a silhouette, a beacon black in the raging sway away. And some days, I too wonder if she was really ever there or just part of my creation. But someone so fair, that's an honor I can't claim. Even though she is the fountain, she is the foundation of everything I ever made. She remains the deepest ocean man would ever get to wade. She is the one thing I cannot escape, the one wall I won't break, the one dream that doesn't have to end. When my brain said it's time to wake, she won't forever be the only apocalypse that felt safe. And I may be the pugilist blue, but I never fought for her because she is not a prize. She has no price, only a perfect sadness in her eyes that reminds me of the earth. And to me, all these lonely hours, bruises healed, not by love, but only touched by dust, were all worth getting to honor her 1,000 times again. Even if I say, farewell, my love, and she replies, farewell, my friend. She was the only heading my heart had ever had. And though I was ever lost, I have never thought of turning back. End poem.
Excellent job, Faziana. Great job. And as usual, I had like 500 things marked here, and then kind of lost it because I kept finding more. So it took me 1 second to find where I was here. So great stuff. Really interesting. And I like that he didn't necessarily do it in order. I did write, not for the contest, but I wrote for this. And I had to do it in order. I just the ball directions kind of a person. But I like how he kind of didn't do it in order and found his own order of how to explain it, which is great. And he has so many different stanzas here, but, I'm just going to take Freeze. And the first stanza in Freeze is, "It was good to talk to you of life and woe, the rising snow where I froze and thought it so that life was to them what death was to me over too soon." And then at the end of that, the last stanza is, "It reminded me that not death nor life on their own could ever be divine." And I thought that was just really interesting. Because it is kind of true. It's like sadness. I think I wrote about this the other day. I think you just commented on this exact thing that I wrote in the poem the other day, Faziano, when I was listening to your show. But like, how do you know sadness? It's hard to know sadness unless you know happiness. Because if you really lose happiness, you can. Those extremes to know, to know pain is more if you have the pleasure taken away from you, right? So how can, being divine on their own, life or death, it does mean if we're just immortal all the time and there was no death, how would that make us? How would that make us feel? How would life actually feel? It wouldn't be as precious, right? Or the same way around. So I thought that was very interesting as usual. For what Ben said, and then where is it here? Flight, very short for Ben. I'm going to read it again real quick here. "Wait for me after. Don't wait too long. I haven't the heart left. Another song, and I hear the laughter just saying, gone. Because you should heal wherever the well. Don't wait for me. If you feel the need to leave, I'll find my own way out." So flight of, you think of this prompt as flight, meaning like you're running away from, the pain, the horror, the fear, right? So if you see something that's scary, instead of facing it, instead of fighting it, instead of all the other prompts, you run. And this one is more, you're with somebody and you have to heal. And it's I felt almost more like they're letting you go. I'm going to be okay. You need to heal. I'm going to make the sacrifice. Go take care of yourself. I'll be okay, and not necessarily him fleeing, but more just going to do what he has to do on his path, and that other person kind of almost making the sacrifice of the flight. So instead of flight being running away, flight is almost like another fight, except you're fighting for someone else. It's that. You see that almost stereotypically in a lot of movies where the guy's like, "Don't worry about me, I'm okay, you go," even though the guy's dying on the ground in the movie, right? Where somebody is more concerned with somebody else and sending him off. So to me, his flight is almost more of like a fight, except fighting for somebody else. It really interesting takes. And I'll have to talk to Ben about muse, because he has that word, and I know what it means, but he has it in almost every poem that he has. He uses muse in almost every single poem, and I really like the continuity and almost the continuation that he has that. It's not a complaint, Ben, at all. It's a very interesting, positive thing that you have that running theme in a lot of your poems. And I'll talk to you about what that is and why you use that so much. But I just noticed it again today. So excellent read, and it's a great picture. I believe that's Ben in the picture. So anybody who wants to know what Ben looks like, I believe that is him in the picture if anybody's following along. So I know you got all kinds of thoughts, Faziano. What's going on?
Well, I enjoyed the whole thing. I think my favorite parts are, My throat's kind of bothering me tonight, so I keep gulping. I'm sure that sounds really weird. Okay. She is Euphoria's unraveling into string every time I get close. So that the muse is Euphoria's unraveling is interesting because usually I think of the muse as like something who spreads everything together, who helps you get everything into a place that you can create from. But this muse, instead, is kind of tearing things apart. And the unraveling into string makes me think about the fates and how the string is your life, and the fates can see where you've been and where you are, and then they cut it when it's time for your time to end. So she's unraveling that string. She's making the life go down a different path. And then the string also made me think about how you are, like, sometimes at the end of your rope. You're holding on by a thread. You're just barely surviving. And she's unraveling that string. She's making you look at every piece of what's holding you together. And that can create good art when you're looking at not just one strand, but all the little things that make up that strand. So if you're, like, embroidering, say, which I'm just starting to learn how to do, it seems like you have, like, a piece of thread that's one thing. And then that can really split up into a few different things. And each of those can split up into a few different things. And if you look very closely at your life, there's a lot to pick away at. And when I'm thinking about unraveling the string, the muse is making you look at the little details of life, but also maybe making you chase the string into big things that you may have missed. So it can work both ways. And then she will forever be the only apocalypse that felt safe. That is a really interesting phrase, that those two lines together. The only apocalypse that felt safe. Apocalypse, by definition, is not very safe. The end of the world, as we know it. And yet, she made it feel like a good thing. That when the world stops because you're so happy, or like this is the moment you want to just like stay in forever. That's kind of what I think about when it's like an apocalypse that felt safe. It's like, I don't care what happens to the rest of the world because all that matters is us in this moment. I don't know if that's actually at all what he was going for, but that's what came to mind when I read that part. I thought this was all really interesting and beautiful.
Excellent, Phazey. Excellent. All right, Ben, I hope you did not fall asleep with that cigarette in your mouth and enjoyed our commentary on your poem. And, yeah. And there you go. There you go. You had a smile, Fizzy, and I just laughed for you, so there you go. All right. I should do it again. Let's see how many times I can make her laugh. I'm kidding. So where do you want to go? We have a few more as well. What do you want to do?
I'm going to play the audio by Weaver of Dreams.
Light. Why did I come out for a drink on my own to this bar? I should know better than that by now. A wired-looking guy offers to buy me a drink and then turns nasty when I say no. I lose my temper. Tell him to get lost. Flight. I decide the best thing to do would be to simply walk away, but Big Mouth won't leave it. By now he's shouting loudly, drawing more attention to me, calling me a frigid, stupid bitch. This is my cue to exit, which I attempt to do. Freeze. The creep grabs my arm. Then I see a glint of steel. I feel as though there is now ice in my veins. Fear has paralyzed me. I've heard this happens, but I didn't think that I would freeze. Fawn, it was time to calm things down. I stepped closer to him, smiling. Here's a tip. Make him see you as a person, not a victim. I said, we should talk this over. Grinning, he let go of my arm. Then I hit him hard with a beer bottle.
Weaver, I kind of like that it goes back to the fight response at the end there. It goes full circle. Also, the picture with the sword and the bottle, that's totally my style. I love it. I think this is a really great example of a situation where you would have the different responses. Because I think most people, most women at least, and I don't want to be sexist and assume just women, but most women have faced this pressure at the bar where someone just isn't taking a hint, and you got to figure out how to deal with them. So I thought this was a really good situation to examine as having different responses to, because, you know, people all have different responses, and also the same person can have different responses depending on their mood or the situation. So seeing all of them here is really what I was going for in this contest, to examine a situation and think about how each of them could apply. So the losing the temper. Interesting that the actual fighting doesn't happen in the fight section. That makes me happy, and I don't know why, but it does. just the casual way she talks about it, like, but Big Mouth won't leave it. It's very kind of relatable language. It's very accessible. And the choice of trying to get away, but then there's, you know, flight is not always an option because sometimes they don't let you leave. And then the freezing is really well done, because it's like that moment when he grabs the arm. And it's just that, like, kind of shock of, like, he's actually touching me right now. Are you serious? I like blood feels as though there is now ice in my veins. The fear has paralyzed me. You can just feel yourself go cold. And that kind of denial of, like, I'm not a person who freezes. This is what other people do. I thought I would be strong in this situation. I like that she has that questioning of herself, that surprise that she didn't think that she'd be like that. And then for Fawn, trying to be friendly again, and then just not being able to follow through with that, going back to the fight. I don't know if there's a twisted part of me, but I really like that it ended like that. What did you think, Dan?
Yeah, I did. I liked it. It ended. It's like a, I don't want to, you know, it's a tough situation. I want to say a happy ending, but there you go. Like, I got hit in the head with a beer bottle, so there, happy ending in my opinion. You got what you deserve. I did like the here's a tip, make him see you as a person, not a victim, and that's interesting to me. I've watched some of those shows on serial killers and different things like that, and it is actually common that I've heard multiple stories of women that have escaped by actually embracing their captive. I remember a story of a woman who got kidnapped and thrown in a car, and instead of trying to fight, she had a conversation with the guy. Like, she was like almost befriending him, and like, hey, why are you doing this? What's wrong with you? You know, and maybe even kissing his butt a little, you know, hey, you're a good looking guy, you're doing this, and just talking to him. And he literally just let her go, you know? So I don't know if it's because he felt you know, so she was smart enough to keep her wits and you know, just, it's, you know, I know the first thing you want to do is just beat the crap out of this guy, but she was able to, you know, psychology on him and escape. And he just let her go. He for whatever reason, he got, maybe he, you know, you never know what these people are looking for, and he got that, maybe that connection, or, you know, maybe he couldn't do what he was going to do because now he felt like he knew her. I've also read people who have been kidnapped and eventually started, you know, embracing the person, not because they liked them, but just they were trying to get his guard down, where, you know, I read about somebody who was kidnapped and kept captive, and because she started to, like, embrace him and treat him almost as a lover, as a boyfriend, he let his guard down, and she was able to run over and escape. So I know this is not at all the situation, luckily, that, you know, we were got into, but that's what that reminded me of. I just thought it was really interesting. And I did like, you know, I did like the casual way that she told it. I thought it was really great where she did use the lines of, what was it again here? Just all the casual way that she kind of told it was to call him the creep and so forth, where she told it where I thought was really good. But then I see a glint of steel, which was once rich blood. It feels as though there's not ice in my veins and I'm paralyzed. So she all of a sudden, you know, and you get that fear where you're like, what do I do? You know, am I, like, I'm nervous. How am I going to handle this situation? So it kind of read as a nice little story as well, too. Nice job, Weaver, and I'm glad that guy got a lump in his head, if this is a true story. Okay, cool. What else have we got going on here?
We have one by G.A. Grimm. Would you read that one for us, please?
Of course I would. Take a look here. G.A. Grimm, this is Two Boys. Running from memories long ago lives, my brother holding my hand, lest I fall again, fleeing from all the monsters, from foster care, from fucking everything that made us hurt, eating from dumpsters when hungry, outweighed pride. Imagine possessing a child's strength when it is something more that is required. Only to be caught again, promises made, neither believe, no more running, no more hitting, until eventually the bad becomes the new normal and the good. Well, there was never any of that. Things once more remembered, things once more forgotten, trouble shared like the bottle when it loosens the chains, then our tongues, pieces scattered to be picked up like the bottle when it is dropped from being shared too much. It is stunning looking back, freezing me in place when thought of, there will always be a piece of me there, there will always be a piece of me in it. So like water, taking any shape that is needed to flow, I too change, a child no longer. It was only us for a time until there was none. You rebelled, denied, and hated, hardened your heart and your fist, ashamed of me, that I did not follow as I did back then. Tell me, brother, know you my worth, see my potential, a vastness filled with nothing, wasted. All the things that you claim I lack, I carry no longer, leaving them in pages past, my thoughts, my feelings hidden away for the world to see. You think me weak because I cry, I pity you. The strength of tears lies in why they are shed, and who I stand here, and for who. I stand here weathering all, arms wide. This is how I defy. This is how I fight back. End poem. His author note states, although my brother and I shared the same experience, we processed and dealt with it in different ways. He's 6 years older, and I could not, and so that could be a large part of why. We were really close when we were little, and then for a while not. I happen to say we've never been closer. And so anyway, excellent job.
That was wonderful. Really different for him, I think, and just really sad too. It seems like it's a true story. So I'm so sorry that you had to struggle like that. It always hits me harder when it's the story of a child. And I know that he's not a child anymore, but to have that helplessness when you're young and have to grow up with those scars. I like that it did go into the different types. Like he says, I didn't exactly follow the instructions, but you do see that. You see the flight in him, you know, trying to run away from his memories. That's a different kind of flight response, to disassociate, to not want to think about something. That is a kind of flight. It doesn't have to literally be running. And then it also talks about, like, trying to get away from the situation. It just makes me so sad, people mistreating. And, like, that foster care can be so terrible. Every time I read something like this, I'm like, I have to become a foster mom and be, like, the good one. It just breaks my heart. Where is it now? Lost my place. I really liked the part about the bottle, too. The bottle that loosens the chains, that makes them feel free, then our tongues, so they speak a little too freely, maybe. Pieces scattered to be picked up. When you open up yourself, talking about those things that you might not usually, and to feel the freedom of not holding everything in, then there are those pieces scattered because you've opened yourself up, and there, you know, you're like, you have to put yourself back together again once you've opened up. Sometimes you need that time to get yourself back in the metaphorical bottle of your mind, but then the bottle's dropped, and that, you know, when you are too tipsy, you might literally drop the bottle. But from being shared too much, so you know, the alcohol was shared too much, but also maybe they overshared about their lives, maybe said something that they regret saying, and once it's out there, you can't really take it back, and so maybe it makes things awkward between the people, between the siblings, with their friends, just having shared more than they normally would. And then to feel frozen, not just in that moment when something is happening, but to feel frozen by it years later, to have that reaction, because all of these can happen as a delayed response to trauma. We have the running away in the mind. We have the being frozen where you're just stuck in a memory loop, and knowing that a piece of you is stuck in that timeline. As much as most of the time you've moved on, there's a part of you, your inner child, that is stuck in that horrible time. And it's a different kind of freezing that I think is really appropriate for here. And when it's talking about the brother had more of a fight response, hardened your heart and your fists, the rebel. And I think that probably has the fight response in more than one way. So in the time, probably had some literal fights, but also later on has that anger about the time. There's the fight response, even if it's not a physical fight, of having that hatred and hanging on to that bitterness about what happened. So one brother is sad and has that lingering probably fear, and the older brother has more of the anger, the fight response, even if it's just in his head at this time. And then the fact that there's conflict between the brothers also shows that not everyone understands each other's responses to things. you can have very different reactions to the same experience. And, you know, that's just the way that people are. Not everyone's going to respond the same way. I think that is really great if you acknowledge that here. The strength of tears lies in why they are shed and for who. I think there is a lot of strength in tears, in allowing yourself to feel something, in recognizing that the what happened was not okay, and in maybe crying for the people who are still in that situation, and for who. Those tears are not a sign of weakness. They are how he fights back. Having the compassion and being getting past that anger is a way of fighting back. Breaking the cycle is a way of fighting back. This is really great. You know, he says in the AN that I can remove it if I don't think it fits, but I think it fits very well. So thank you so much for sharing that with us.
It absolutely does fit, and you covered a lot. You covered most of it, I think. I do agree. I just want to talk about the kids, and I just don't get it. There's nothing worse than. anything against children. You know, there's a movie out now about child trafficking that's out in theaters, and I think it's an important movie to have. I don't think I'll see it because I don't think I can. I don't think I want to sit through it. It's on TV. I think I might, but it's so hard. There was a movie that came out a while ago called Mystic River, which is about, you know, a river here in Boston, the Mystic River, and it's about a kid being kidnapped and I think tortured and abused and then finally getting away and how what he's like as an adult. And, you know, he's a complete mess, you know, kind of as an adult. And it's just the scene when he gets kidnapped is just so hard. I bought the movie and I watched it. It won Academy Awards, I forget what. And I actually got rid of it because I just didn't even want it in the house. It was a great movie, but I'm like, I'm never going to watch this again. Like, I don't want to go through that. It's so hard to watch things against kids because it's so not that violence and hatred and all that is you know, a good thing. It's anybody, but, you know, kids are innocent and ignorant, if you want to say. They don't necessarily understand, you know, they're open. And with your contest and with other things in the world going on, I've been thinking a lot about predators. And predators take advantage of, you know, the prey they take advantage of the ones that are ignorant, right? If you think of a lion, you know, the ones that are strong and big, the antelope and that are looking around and everything, they don't take advantage of. They take advantage of the young. They try to take advantage of the young fawns that aren't aware yet, that don't have the ability, you know, that don't have the experience and maybe aren't looking and seeing what's going on. You take advantage of that. And a predator on a human scale, you know, human to human, is no different. You know, taking advantage of a child because they're innocent and they don't understand what's going on. It's just I don't know how people can do that to other people. And unfortunately, it's going on all over the place. You know, you think it's in third world countries and with people being trafficked, but it's the foster homes and not even foster homes, like regular homes with like real parents. And so I think this really, you know, it sounds like a survival story that G.A. Grimm wrote, where there was just, you know, just horrible situations, and you know, they survived. They survived to live normal lives and get through it and come out of it, which is a good, you know, this is a tough story, but it's a good story in that sense of survival. So, excellent. We have 1.5 hour left and a few more poems. So what do you want to do?
I'm going to read a poem by Casey Day. And this is TrueStory.com by Casey Day. Fight. I was 14 and a man tried to hold me down. in a junior high school girl's bathroom. I punched him hard, left my right-handed knuckles printed on his left cheek. Flight. I was 18, taking a taxi home, when the taxi man told me it'd be $20 for the lift, or I could pay another way. I threw a 20, bailed, never rode a cab again. Freeze. I was 13, a kidnapped runaway, and high on acid. The man came into the room and started to touch my body. I became a ghost, floating above my small, lifeless body. Fawn. I was 21, and my manager said he'd seen some racy photos of me online, told me he liked them, stared at my body, and I laughed uneasily and said, thanks. End poem.
Excellent read, as always, Feziana. It's always tough to hear these, you know, these type of poems, but you know, people go through this stuff, and you know, sorry, Casey, if you had to go through these situations, and I hope there wasn't more. I just want to start with the title, though. I do like the truestory.com. I just think that's kind of a almost a fun title to this very tough, you know, story poem that we're talking about here. And you know, when I first read this, I tried to read these beforehand. Though when I first read this, it just so many thoughts came into play, and it's the predatory again. You know, I've said many times before that we're all chemistry, and there are just, you know, some people, it might be guys and girls, that women and men, that you know, their sexual chemistry, whatever, is so much in them they can't control themselves, you know, and they make these, you know, to the point of some of these things were inappropriate and you know, scary comments to actually attacking, you know, girls. And it's sad that, you know, the 14 and 13 was attacked. And just, you know, these people who can't control themselves and end up being literally predators. Like you can see in all four of these scenarios, you know, Casey was the prey and these people were predatory of them. And just, it can be very scary. You know, I certainly not speaking as a woman, but I've talked to women before who would rather be, you know, they'd rather be killed than raped. And you know, I'm not saying that that's the way it is, but I've had women tell me that, and I think, you know, I can just imagine, you know, I don't want to get graphic here, but you know, a person is basically entering your body, they're using your body and that's got to be just the most horrible feeling of just being completely used as an object. That, you know, you can understand that, and it's, you know, it's such a bad thing to go through, to for somebody to have to go through that. And you know, as a woman, especially if you're a, you know, attractive woman, it can be a blessing in disguise. You know, you've all heard that it's a blessing and a curse, because you are, you know, it's good to be beautiful, but then you're always going to be this target for guys. You just, that they're only can see you as something other than a person, which is what this is. You know, the guy with the taxi, you know, I don't know if he, you know, it sounds like he meant what he was saying. Don't know if he knew that it was going to be that traumatic, and that's some of it as well too. That maybe they just think they're kidding around or they're being flirty, but that can be a traumatic, scary thing for a young 18-year-old girl to have somebody, you know, there's a big difference between just, you know, flirting around or kidding with your friends or something, or being in that type of a situation that is unnerving. And it's, you know, it's too bad. The last thing I want to say is on this, is I've always said that we're on a crossroads of evolution. And we are way more animal than we think we are, you know. And we like to think that we're these evolved spiritual humans that are way above everything else. And I think we're way more animal than we are. We're way more instinctual, and there are just people that can't control their just urges and instincts and emotions and chemistry. There's millions of people like that in a variety of ways. It's not just this. Anyway. We could talk about this subject all night, you know, this type of a thing, but A couple of tough situations we heard tonight so far, three so far, and I hope everybody's okay, and all of you had to go through things like this. Faziana, your thoughts?
I think Casey did a really great job of exploring the topic, and unfortunately, most women I know have had at least one of these experiences, if not all of them. It's common in a way that is just awful, and I don't mean that to downplay Casey's experience. I think she went through some horrible stuff, and that she did a fantastic job of telling us about it in a way that was, not overly graphic, and yet hits us in our emotions. I'm proud of her for the fight, punching the man at only 14 and being defensive like that. I'm not a violent person, but I do cheer on that young girl who fought her own battle there. And flight. I like that she talks about one where it's not necessarily he was forcing it, but there is definitely that fear and uncomfortableness of being alone with someone who's trying to exchange your sexuality for money, especially when you're as young as she was. But really at any age, there are a lot of places where it's really scary to take a taxi as a woman. I think she did it really well there about how she wrote this and also how she handled it. And the fact that, like you said, he might not have thought much of it, but she never rode in a cab again. It changed her view of that, her sense of safety of paying for a ride, because there might be an expectation or something where she had to pay in a different way, and that's just it's really unfortunate. But I think she did a great job at talking about that. And then Freeze, the disassociation described here, I became a ghost floating above my small lifeless body. I mean, that is like textbook trauma right there. That it's a terrifying feeling. I've definitely been that ghost, and it's is unbelievable. Like I've never been able to describe it, but I actually think she did a great job there of making it understandable for people who haven't felt it, and that she. Yeah, I'm lost for words because I feel hit by this. I think she did a really great job at expressing some difficult subjects, and it's all connected because it's all some kind of sexual attack or harassment in various levels, and the different responses that people can have. The same person can have them all at different times in their life. And, in one particular situation, four different people could have four different responses. So this really shows the variety of responses you can have. And, she did a fantastic job. Thank you for sharing, Casey.
I agree. She absolutely did. And you never know how that type of a situation is going to handle. And it is too bad that most women, I've heard that too, that so many women have been through, something like this. Not all men are like that, I'm going to say. There are some good men out there someplace too, but there's bad men and women in the world, unfortunately, and you have to deal with them sometimes. And it's too bad. Hope Casey and everybody else is okay, and glad you guys are, are still here making it through those horrible things. I hope someday humanity learns and can you know, we can overcome all this stuff. All right. We got 15 minutes left. What do you think? What's our plan of action?
We have one by Arch Hay. Would you read that one, please?
Arch Hay, there it is, yep. Surviving. Seeing the jaws of the beast, he froze, a stalagmite rooted on the cave floor. A boundary against the dark, he held, his shield, his spear, his world holding. Excuse me, its breath, so too, his silent, his heart's stilled silent. He, a statue locked in time, cloaked in the shadow for what was to come. Then within his narrowed throat, spark ignited, now fire, not ice. He fought the fear against the swallowing dark, his voice a war cry for the beast to hear. But courage faded to ash, his strength waned, and his footsteps ran staccato under the rhythm of rain, beneath the cloak of the moonless night, running from the belly of the beast. When the dawn arrived, it found him fawning in the night, in the light, a man, a beast, a shadow, surrendering to his plight, placating, appeasing the beast, till awakening from a sleepless nightmare and night. Poem.
I thought this was fantastic. I liked the rhythm of it. Like, it felt like it had a really good cadence. I could tell in your read that I don't know if exactly what format it is, but it had almost an iambic pentameter kind of feel to it, the ba-dum, ba-dum, ba-dum. And it just it flowed really great. The vocabulary, like the stalagmite, towering rock out of the cave floor, great use of that. The world holding its breath, I like that. Where is it now? I like the swallowing dark too. Also, the staccato, just really great word choices. I like surrendering to his plight, placating, appeasing the beast, to awaken from sleepless nightmare night. It's a really great ending. And a nightmare night that didn't even involve sleep, so those nightmares are real, or at least in your waking mind. That's a powerful statement to make, that it's a nightmare without being a nightmare. Really a strong piece. And I like the title, Surviving, because that's the thing about all of these Fs, the flight, the fight, the freeze, and the fawn. They're all instinctive ways of surviving. And sometimes our instincts are not the greatest. You know, that deer in the headlights is not that helpful sometimes. But there's reasons why we do the things we do. And this is about trying to survive the hardship. What did you think, Dan?
Exactly. It is all survival techniques, right? If you're... I was talking to my wife about this contest actually a little bit. We were talking about fawn, and she was saying it's almost like it almost be taken as brown nosing as well too, you know. And I started thinking about bullying, you know, and sometimes, you know, I think a lot of us have been through bullying before, and sometimes it's a matter of almost kissing up to people and giving them, you know, befriending them, even though you don't want to be. You know, you don't want to be part of that, but it's a survival technique, right? To kind of, you know, jump in with the group, be part of the mob or be be attacked. And he has those. He starts off right away, seeing the jaws of the beast, he froze, so stalagmite rooted in the cave floor. And then now spark with his narrow throat, spark the fire. He fought fear against the dark and his war cry. It's just kind of this little story about all these different things that can go through. And sometimes it can be really quick, right? You could try to fight somebody and immediately realize that you're not going to win. And now what do you do? Now maybe you, you know, I mean, all these things can happen in a second. You freeze for a second, then all of a sudden you get your strength and you fight, and you can't win. So you know, fawn or you know, maybe you play dead or whatever you do. You know, it can happen. It can happen all quickly, which is kind of how I got this as well too. Like, it was just kind of all these things at once that kind of happened, and whatever I can do to survive this situation. So yeah, excellent, Arch. Hey, great job. All right, so we have 10 minutes left. What do we have left here?
We have your piece.
Oh, okay, we have time. All right, just in case we needed time, so I guess we did, so I will read this. and it is called 4F Club, Fight, Flight, Freeze, Fawn. Countless the things that make me, endless scenarios for humans to be. I don't remember a time of not knowing evil, but I only remember back to about 4. How is someone so young supposed to fight something so hard to understand? Why is it all creatures fight when attacked, if that's what they wanted? Avoidance is survival. Nocturnal animals hide underground. Loneliness, a comforting friend to be forgotten. Oh, such peace. If only myself wasn't there to be such a relentless ridiculer, why can't it just be loneliness? Excuse me. Predators are relentless. There's no cure for bloodlust, and victimization is a virus in the wind. Everybody breathes. Sometimes it's best to play dead, as viruses need a living host. Hope the predators want fresh blood. I can't hide my spirit away. I can hide my spirit away. And if a lifetime of acting is worth anything, they'll never even know I have one. I can compete and laugh and lie with the best that ever was. My body will always heal most of the time. My mind has been so overly corrupted and coerced, it's almost instinctual to fit in. But that innocence that didn't know evil, well, that's why your mother will save a teddy bear and give it to you as an adult. Fighters are instinctual. Warriors are trained. I write sometimes more than I probably should, sometimes outside the rules. I'm just hoping to be a flower on the battlefield. Countless things that make me me. Endless scenarios for humans to be. End point.
Well, first of all, I really like the title, 4F Club.
Yeah.
I like that you frame the poem with those two lines, having it the same at the end as at the beginning. I have a thing about framing. I really like that it goes full circle. Where is it now? I like that you use the animals as examples too. The creatures that fight, the creatures that hide underground. I love the part, if only myself wasn't there to be such a relentless ridiculer. Sometimes we are our worst bullies, and isn't it awful when we are both the predator and the prey, because you can't get away from yourself. And sometimes it's best to play dead, as viruses need a living host. And it's true, there's a reason why people play dead, and why animals play dead, because a lot of creatures won't eat something that they find dead because they have that instinctive knowledge of, like, did it get poisoned? Did it have a sickness? Did it, like, is it here rotting too long? Like, the animals are smart enough to know, like, that could kill me if I eat this. I don't know how it died. And then prefer to go after something living. And bullies, to a lesser extent, they want someone who's going to give them a reaction. They want the yelling or the crying or, like, something that they can laugh at. And if you just don't respond, if you just kind of, like, have that apathy playing dead inside, they'll get bored because they're looking for a reaction. So sometimes playing dead isn't necessarily, like, lay down on the ground and pretend you're dead, but there is a different kind of playing dead. I like how you kind of correct yourself there, where my body will always heal most of the time. So not always.
Yeah.
There's some times where it's not. Yeah. And the mother with the teddy bear, I really liked because, you know, there's this, sometimes we need to be reminded who we really are and who we were at our core, and that nostalgia of an old toy from before we became jaded is a way that can happen. And I never really thought of that as, like, the reason why a parent would keep something, but I do feel that, you know, every once in a while, my mom will give me something from my childhood, and I've never really thought about it that way, but it totally does connect you to that kind of better version of yourself. Maybe not better, but just different. This is really an intelligent piece.
I appreciate it. I couldn't think of a scenario. I really want. I miss writing for your contest because I'm now that I'm part of it. I don't want to write for my own contest, but so I really, because I always look at prompts, and I said, you know, I'm going to write for this one, and I couldn't. I also had trouble thinking of a specific scenario, so that's kind of why I put the bookmarks at the beginning and end, because the scenario I was talking about was my life, and I started thinking about people's entire lives as scenarios. You know, as, okay, here's a person born, their life is a scenario that a person could, that a human being could go through, this scenario of life. So the scenario I used was an entire life. And I also threw something else in there for you. When I put, sometimes I write more than I probably should, sometimes outside the rules. That was because you had basically asked to do a stanza for each one, and I put extra stanzas. So I was just, making note that I didn't follow by the rules, but it was very interesting to it was interesting to think about the different ways that one might throughout their lives be having to deal with being attacked, which I bet you there's not a person on the planet that at one point in their life hadn't been prey. You know, I see it so much now, Faziana. It's very sad. I just see predators everywhere on social media. You know, these people just doing things to, you know, pushing just random people into fountains and stealing things from them and just doing things, and it's basically predator and prey, you know. And I'm seeing so much of it now in the United States. There's so many random robberies now and violence and everything, and it's predator and prey, and it's kind of sad to see us kind of going back like that, you know. But anyway, we have 3 minutes that we can, let's think of something happy to end on, and we can wrap up. We don't know what we're doing next one, do we?
We don't, for this one, no. My Part Sinner, Part Saint show does have a contest open, though. People can check out. It's based on the music of Kiki Rockwell, and
yes.
She writes some very unconventional pieces. The first prompt is Same Old Energy, and it's a song about really the way women were treated as suspected witches, and Same Old Energy kind of refers to as we still have that kind of conflict towards people who are different, people who are a little bit more bold than society wants them to be. Now, of course, in the video, she actually is a witch. Oh, I am out of time. So check out my contest, and we will see you again in 2 weeks for Double Helix. Thank you, Dan, for your wonderful contest and for being my co-host. And good night, everyone.
Good night, everyone. Thank you.